It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back into the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Dustin Hockensmith and Greg Pickle here. Still talking Penn State, Michigan State, some might say unfortunately so. But we're continuing. We really didn't get much into the game, Greg. I do want to let you know, in partnership with GoPSURV.com, we are offering a unique RV opportunity, the Keystone Sports Network RV. It's a special RV. You'll get all the benefits of staying at the GoPSURV.com lot, along with some very special extras, like a catered barbecue meal from 409 Tailgate Club, along with the famous 409 Tailgate Club gift box. Also included is two bottles of wine with a blue and white wine gift box and a case of Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light beer. And to top it off, you get your very own Keystone Sports polo shirt and hat, something I've been begging for weeks. Maybe not. So I have a Keystone Sports Network polo shirt. So you can be like me. Is that a selling point?
There you go.
Then maybe not. To hear all about the KSN RV, you can reach out to Jim directly via email at info@ksnsports.net. You can also use the contact us button on your KSN app. While you're there, ask a question on Ask Greg. There's a button for that as well. I have a feeling what the vibe is on some of those questions this week, Greg. So to get into the nuts and bolts of the game, I'm going to start with a sort of big question that may or may not be able to be answered, but how exactly would you describe what went wrong in this game, where in individual areas the blame might go? We were discussing this just a little bit, but I think it's just it's all feels like such a blur, like it was a 60-minute car wreck. And there came certain points where you just figured, okay, Penn State is a play away from opening it up now. It's kind of the way that, you know, Illinois went, kind of the way that Pitt went. Penn State was always a play away, and this is where the program is and how the offense factors into it. And that play just never came.
No, it didn't. I mean, you really kept thinking that at some point Penn State would, you know, finally close the door on Michigan State, because, again, I don't think there were many people out there. Even talking to some of our counterparts that cover Michigan State, you had to look really high and long and far to find one of them that were picking Michigan State to win this game. And not just picking Michigan State. They weren't just picking Michigan State to lose. They were picking them to lose pretty handily, as most of the people were that cover Penn State. So we
do the predictions thing on Penn Live.
Right.
And I reach out to people on that,
yep,
on that beat. And I think it was 10 out of 11 picked at least double digits, and a majority picked a cover. A lot of people seem to like that 13.5, 14-point spread for Penn State. And, you know, Michigan State just did a good job and had a plan to hang around.
Right.
And they played like they had nothing to lose, because they really didn't have anything to lose.
No. No, they didn't. I mean, they were obviously beaten up by the time they had got to Penn State. But as we talked about, this was sort of their one shot at, changing their season. I mean, now they have some life going to go play Michigan this week. And if they lose to Penn State and then they lose to Michigan, I mean, they might as well forget about it. Just cancel the rest of the season. So they came in as a desperate team with a little bit of fight, and Penn State came in off a bye, very complacent in a lot of ways. And, you know, again, there's blame to go all the way around. Penn State was outcoached. It was outplayed. It was outschemed. I mean, there's a number of people that need to reevaluate how they go about their business, because this is now two games in a row where that can be said. And, you know, it's great to beat up on, you know, not inferior opponents. And, you know, this team, some people say that, you know, this team was a couple plays away from being 6-0. Conversely, it's a couple plays away from being 3-3, too, if they don't come back and beat Appalachian State. So, a lot to figure out at this point, obviously. You know, I think that ultimately what it comes down to is that Penn State has a lot to figure out and a short week to do it before they fly to Indiana.
So there were a couple things from Michigan State's side. Reddit and I'm sorry, I forget the author, but the Detroit Free Press kind of pointed out what Michigan State did differently in this game. And they were, you know, really skewed towards overcoming some of their weaknesses. One of the big ones being their offensive line was ravaged by injuries. What they did was they shifted to a zone blocking scheme.
Yeah.
On the fly. Like, I can't imagine trying to change your identity, you know, one of your core functions as an offense on the fly. But that's what they did. And what they also did to kind of limit the amount of exposure for Brian Lewerke was to get him on the move a lot. And that one you saw for sure. You might not have noticed the difference in offensive line technique. I didn't. But it's stuff that Michigan State coached up, did differently than probably Penn State saw on film. And it was all designed to keep them in the game for a long period of time. Then you look at, I think there was a lot, there was much too much success on first down, creating situations where they were on schedule,
yeah,
and being able to create situations where they could be unpredictable and Penn State couldn't sit on any one thing. That was an issue I felt like all game long. I don't really have the numbers in front of me, but Michigan State ran 89 plays.
Yeah,
89 plays for this team, and any defense, no matter how much you cycle guys in, is going to get tired from that.
Yeah, now you know there's a lot of questions too when you talk about the cycling. Like, what's up with Fred Hansard? Because that was I honestly have no clue. Even with help, how he walked off the field. I mean, I thought for sure we were talking about a cart situation. So the rotation moving forward is going to be impacted. But yeah, I mean, they were on the field almost what it felt like the whole game. I mean, Penn State's offense would make a little progress here and there, but for the most part, excuse me, it was simply just over and over and over and over again the same darn thing of Penn State just not being able to consistently, you know, do what it needed to do to win and do what it needed to do to score points. So you put it all together, and I think that that's why most are pretty, you know, frustrated with this effort, just simply because of the fact that Penn State had a lot in front of it. And look, the rest of the carnage across the country was, I mean, setting up Penn State to be in a really, really good spot that, you know, it obviously could have accomplished a lot if it had simply won this football game. It could have moved, I don't know if it would have moved into the top five, but it certainly would have jumped up higher than its, you know, number eight ranking before the game was. And, you know, now all that has sort of fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, looking at the drive chart in the second half for Penn State's offense, it's not pretty. It's not pretty. A lot of drives ended up with 20 or fewer yards. And there's a certain amount of discouragement, I think, that comes with that. That's part of Michigan State's formula anyway. They're better in the time of possession part of things by design than Penn State is. When you're a quick strike offense, sometimes you give that up.
Yeah.
But as it starts to give this snowball effect in the second half, and when Michigan State is stringing together some drives that take up time and you're getting off the field in 40 seconds or a minute, there, it all starts to paint the picture of Penn State, you know, their forthcoming demise, and that's exactly what happened.
No question. And at the end of the day, I think that's why there are so many people that are just disappointed with this effort, because, you know, we've come to learn a good bit about James Franklin at this point. You know, first, obviously, he's a good motivator. He's a good coach. He's a good recruiter. He's a good guy that can go out and hire people. But, I mean, does it not feel like at this point that Penn State desperately misses Joe Moorhead, Josh Gattis, and Charles Huff? I mean, you know, the running backs have been fine, but, you know, Huff more so on the special team side of thing. I mean, Phil Gallia, you know, it's hard to have a special teams coordinator and regress in special team, but it sure has felt like Penn State has done that. You know, you can say what you want about coaching versus execution, but at the end of the day, it falls on everyone, and the guy with the title is the one that's going to take the flack. So the receivers, I don't know at this point. I mean, they're mostly invisible outside of KJ Hamler. I don't know if that's necessarily all David Corley's fault.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard for me to parse his role into, because let's be honest, I mean, we talked about this before when Josh Gattis was around, that Penn State's receivers struggled to get open. I mean, this isn't new, and it's not like there's new players that are being thrown into the mix outside of Hamler, of course. So I don't know what to make of that, but, I mean, that's a problem. And then, you know, the offense, it just feels unimaginative at times. And more often than not, Ricky Ronnie seems to cling to, you know, whatever concept of the week was, even if it's not working, and he just keeps going back to the same well, hoping it'll change. And against Michigan State, you're not going to ever, I don't think, break their tendency to do that kind of stuff.
Speaking of concept of the week, where was the Lion package in this one? And what's the end goal here? Let's just assume that there was no gamesmanship or whatever before Ohio State. Tommy Stevens doesn't see the field. I know he's got the foot issue, whatever. Then they try to cram it down Ohio State's throat for particularly the first drive, and it ended up costing them points, I think. And then you don't see it at all again in this game against Michigan State. Either that's part of your scheme or it's not. I don't know if it is or isn't.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it was a selling point to bring Tommy Stevens back, or, you know, I just wonder what is the big picture strategy with using or not using Tommy Stevens.
Yeah, it's a lot of things to question at this point. I mean, I don't know. Joe Moorhead kind of did this too, though, where
yeah.
He jammed it down. You know, he you know, almost, you know, shoved it in the way of things as much as he possibly could. And well, then,
a lot of times when they had a lead and the game wasn't threatened.
Right.
You know, that's what I thought was going to be different this year. And maybe in the second half of the year, maybe it will be. But it hasn't changed. They tried to show it. It's almost like get it on film so everybody's got to account for it, but we're not really going to use it.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think that at this point, I just, like I said, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, you know, it makes you wonder if he actually would have left if he was not injured in the spring. Let's be honest. You can't go transfer somewhere hurt. I mean, you're already behind the eight ball, and then when you're driving around on a scooter, your first, you know, when you get there for spring practice, it's just not going to work. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it makes no sense to me at this point. It would have been nice to see him do something on Saturday for no other reason than, you know, mix things up a little bit, bring some spark to an offense that had absolutely no spark for a majority of the game.
I wanted to bring this out, and I want to give you about 90 seconds at the end here to talk about a positive or two. I can't think of a whole lot at the moment, but so they had Penn State had the two passes that were in Garrett Taylor's and in Amani Overwarrior's hands.
Right.
They also Michigan State put the ball on the turf four times, and Penn State didn't recover any of them.
Right.
So you're talking about, you know, you do the simple math. There were six. You know, I think some of those fumbles, there just wasn't much of an opportunity to get to them. But bad turnover luck is a thing. Oh, and over the course of a 60-minute game, sometimes you have good luck with that. Sometimes you have bad luck with it, depending on where the football went.
Right.
Penn State, I think, had some self-inflicted stuff, but some bad luck as far as that goes, too.
There's no argument to be made there. I mean, I think that if three of the four bounced right back to Michigan State, and one, I believe, there was a pile for that Penn State didn't come out of it with. But it's hard to fumble four times and have three of them bounce right back into your hand. I mean, that's just as unfortunate as it gets. But
speaking of all this, what did C.J. Thorpe do to get the – I didn't really see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so you have to go back and watch it. And
with a slap.
Well, he kind of – it was – it's hard to explain. This is bad. It's like one of those bad radio segments. Like, I don't know how to explain this. Like, I'm going to show you what he did. But he, like, threw his elbow at a guy at the end of that play. And it was definitely penalty worthy. I mean, you can see it. You can't see the whole thing on tape. But I talked to some people that were sitting in that end zone, and they said, yeah, it was what it looked like you thought it would be based on the video of him throwing his elbow. It was, according to the people sitting in the end zone. That's just brutal. I mean, it just was. I mean, you take a goal line stand, and Michigan State might have went four on fourth down and got it. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they kick a field goal. I don't know. But at 7 points that are on the board, they needed five tries to get it in from the one, and it changed the game. Brutal, brutal penalty.
Positive. Miles Sanders, 162 yards. Looked like Saquon a little bit. I know nobody really liked that comparison. Saquon didn't
including
like that comparison
Saquon, yeah.
either. But against the number one run defense in the country, something to build on, I suppose, going forward. We're moving forward here on the Keystone Kickoff Show, taking a look around the Big Ten right after this.
Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light want to remind you that fall is the best season. Why? Because of football. Leaves. Fantasy football, flannel, beards, tailgating. Oh, yeah, and more football. Welcome to the best season ever. Grab some Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Because it's time to get undomesticated. Beer. Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Life gets complicated. And it only gets more complicated when things change. Which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you so that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.
409 Tailgate Club proudly introduces our tailgate wines. Like our great sauces and rubs, you'll enjoy our wines at your next cookout, tailgate, or even as a great gift for that fan of the blue and white. Speaking of blue and white, you've got to try our award-winning Sapphire Blue, made from pure blueberry juice. Or how about our Old Main Pinot Grigio and 1855 Vidal? Go to tailgatewine.com and find all our PA preferred wines. That's tailgatewine.com.